This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You know that feeling when you have something that's really been bothering you, or when you've been fixating on something in your life that's looming large in your mind? We all carry around different stressors in our lives, big and small, and I think we inherently know that when we keep them bottled up inside, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest, and to figure out how to work through whatever it is that's weighing you down. Therapy isn't just for people who have experienced major trauma. There are plenty of benefits it can have for everyone. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. And don't underestimate the power of boundaries either. Those are super important. If you've been wondering if you should give therapy a try, check out BetterHelp. It's a fully online experience and designed from the ground up to be convenient and customizable to your schedule. To get started, you just have to fill out a brief questionnaire that will match you up with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no extra charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/filmdaily today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/filmdaily.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily for Friday, December 14th, 2018. On today's episode, we're going to be talking about the latest film and TV news, and we will offer some comic and graphic novel recommendations in a mailbag segment. My name is Ben Pearson. I'm the senior writer at SlashFilm.com, and I am joined on today's podcast by Slash Film weekend editor Brad Ullman.
Hey, that's me.
And writer Y Train Bowie.
Hey, everyone.
All right, guys. So let's just go ahead and jump into the news. HT, Vanity Fair, wrote an article today, or published an article today, that sort of gave us some insight into the future of the animated Spider-Verse that Sony is working on. And you wrote up an article that sort of broke down all of this information. What are some of the highlights that you learned there?
Yeah, not just the animated Spider-Verse, but all of the Spider properties that are under Sony currently. It's a universe that internally is being called the Sony's Universe of Marvel Characters, or SUMC. And that's something that Amy Pascal, who is the former co-chair of Sony and is now a Sony producer, gave insight to in this profile slash report. So some of the updates she gave is that a Sinister Six movie is still happening. So that's the project that has long been gestating, and has we've been kind of getting updates on it for the past, I don't know, few years now. But Amy Pascal said that Sony is still looking to get the ball rolling on that, especially if the original screenwriter, Drew Goddard, is set to return. And Drew Goddard, who recently made his most recent directorial outing with Bad Times at the El Royale, has expressed interest in going back to the old Sinister Script, Sinister Six script that he wrote.
Yeah, say
there's
that
a
one
lot of S's
five
right
times
there.
Fast, yeah. yeah, that's interesting. I had a chance to talk to him earlier this year when he was putting Bad Times at the El Royale together, and asked him about Sinister Six, and he seemed like he was interested in returning to that if Sony were to, you know, give him that call. So it seems like both parties are interested there. I wonder if that's actually going to happen, because Sinister Six, like you mentioned, that's one of those projects that's been floating around since like the Andrew Garfield Spider-Man movies were still up and running. So it's been several years, I mean 5 years or something at this point, since that was like originally announced. So Brad, do you want to see a Sinister Six movie at this point?
I don't really feel like we need a Sinister Six movie where it's just focusing on them. I wouldn't mind seeing them, you know, build up to the idea of the Sinister Six being in, you know, Spider-Man together at some point and being this big threat that he has to tackle. But I'm fine with not having a movie focusing only on those villains.
Yeah, hopefully Goddard has an interesting take there. But what else did you learn, HG?
So the other thing we learned is that the Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse sequel, which reports confirmed last month, is already in the works of Wonder Woman 1984 screenwriter David Callaham, set to pen the script, and Avatar The Last Airbender's Joaquin Dos Santos, set to direct, is going to focus on a Miles Morales and Gwen Stacy romance. So this is something that was a thread from Phil Lord's original script for Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse that ultimately got cut from this film, but will be picked up in this currently developing sequel. And this is something that's been slowly introduced in more recent comics. Gwen Stacy has been traditionally the love interest for Peter Parker. We've seen that on screen too with The Amazing Spider-Man with Andrew Garfield and Emma Stone. But in the Marvel Now series, Miles and Gwen have started to build up a flirtation and culminate in a kiss that made the cover of Spider-Man number 12.
Interesting. Brad, I know you just saw Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse last night. This movie is out in theaters right now. In lieu of your detailed thoughts about the movie, what do you think about this particular aspect, the idea of Miles and Gwen getting together in a sequel?
I mean, it only makes sense. It's pretty well hinted at in Into the Spider-Verse that their relationship is going to be a key part of Miles' future and how the franchise continues. It's not quite as overt as, you know, them falling in love or anything, but they clearly have a connection in this movie, and so going that route is really just a logical choice to make.
What do you think about it, Aisha? Have you seen Spider-Verse yet, or are you planning to?
I haven't. I'm planning to see it this weekend, so I'm very excited. And I have no thoughts on a romance right now because I don't really know the characters as they are in the movie, but I'm sure I'll love it because I'm just a sucker for a romance in general.
Was there any other information that you gleaned from this Vanity Fair piece?
Yeah, Amy Pascal also referred to the future of the Marvel and Sony deal, which currently allows Marvel to use Peter Parker in Avengers films and to distribute slash have creative control over the Tom Holland Spider-Man solo movies. And that deal, when it will inevitably expire, Amy Pascal seems to not look forward to that. So we don't know whether they will continue this deal, but Amy Pascal said that she can only hope for a future where things work out.
Brad, what do you think about, I mean, the details of this deal have been famously kept under lock and key. Like, you know, a lot of times deals like this will sort of become public knowledge for entertainment reporters, and we know, you know, this person has X number of movies on their contract and stuff, but the Sony Marvel deal, especially as it relates to Spider-Man, has been pretty quiet. So what do you think about that deal in general at this point, and like how both parties could move forward if, for example, it were just to come to an end in like 2020 or something?
I mean, this is a pretty lucrative deal for both Marvel and Sony. As we saw, you know, before, Sony wasn't really sure what to do with Spider-Man as a live-action character, and Marvel really wanted to bring Spider-Man into the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So I think it works out for both of them and would behoove them to expand and extend that deal somehow. I'm sure Sony now is very hungry to get Spider-Man into a Venom movie now that Venom has turned out to inexplicably be this huge international box office hit. So I can almost guarantee that Amy wants to work something out in that regards. But it's, you know, it's tough to say as to how it will continue. We don't really know what Marvel has planned beyond Avengers Endgame at this point. There's one more Spider-Man sequel. You would think that they would want a third one, but I would imagine it depends on what Sony wants to do and that kind of thing. At the very least, Sony has, you know, this great new animated world they can play in with all their Spider-Man characters. So that's good for the time being. But I would imagine they would want to keep having money roll in with their live action deal. So hopefully they figure out a way to craft a new deal to so that fans can still see Spider-Man in the MCU.
Yeah, it seems like it's been a pretty fruitful collaboration on all fronts so far. I mean, they've got the live action stuff with Tom Holland, which, I mean, he's great as the character. And then obviously Spider-Verse is incredible. So we'll talk more about that later. In the meantime, though, let's talk about our next news story, which is the future of Henry Cavill as Superman. So there's been sort of a complicated saga going on about whether or not this actor will return to play Superman in another movie in the DC Extended Universe. And Most recently, according to Jason Momoa, who co-starred with Henry Cavill in Justice League last year, Momoa was on the red carpet for the premiere of Aquaman, and he was asked if Henry Cavill is giving up the role, or if he's going to, you know, stop playing the character. And Jason Momoa says, absolutely not. He says he loves the character and he's not 100%. And the reporter even like sort of went back in for clarification, saying like, okay, so that's not going to happen. Like, he's not going to leave that role. And Momoa again was like, no, he's absolutely not going to leave that role. So this could very well just be a case of an actor not knowing what he's talking about. That kind of happens sometimes here and there. But then again, we don't know. I mean, so just to provide a brief recap, because this entire thing is kind of nuts. There's been a lot of speculation about what the future of the DC cinematic universe, or whatever you want to call this thing officially, is going to be, because there was some reports back in September that Henry Cavill was done playing Superman, saying that Warner Brothers wanted to move the focus away from Superman and instead put the spotlight on a Supergirl movie, which is currently being written right now. And apparently at that time, there were several reports that were saying that negotiations between Henry Cavill and Warner Brothers broke down over a cameo appearance in Shazam, which I guess is not going to happen at this point. And there were some whispers that Michael B. Jordan was being eyed to play a new version of Superman, but Henry Cavill's agent quickly came out and said the cape is still in Henry Cavill's closet, and Warner Brothers issued a statement saying, like, there's no decisions have been made about, you know, any upcoming Superman movies, but we have a great relationship with Henry Cavill. And then Henry Cavill did this bizarre thing where he posted this Instagram video of him wearing a Krypton Lifting Team t-shirt. And he just like stares at the camera while music plays, and he lifts a Superman action figure into frame and then lowers it out of frame, and that's it. Like, no, so I was like, what the hell are you doing, Henry Cavill? What does this mean? What is happening? So it's all been very, very cryptic, and we don't know any like hard details about the future of whether or not he's going to come back to play this character. So I guess I just want to open up the floor to you guys. What do you think about Henry Cavill as Superman? I know that obviously he hasn't always been in the greatest movies, you know, the greatest, like the movies around him have not always been the best, but what do you guys think about him and his take on the character? HG, what do you think?
I think Henry Cavill is actually a great Superman, and he has not been blessed with good Superman movies, but in the there have been moments where you see that there's so much potential for him as the hero, especially in, I remember the first few scenes in Justice League, and then when he returns in Justice League, I guess spoilers for people who have not seen Justice League, he really shines in that as that character, and you see the optimism and the cheesiness that I think is inherent with Superman. So I think that he's good in the role. He hasn't really been given the chance to get a good grasp on the character yet, but I would have liked to see him stay, just because I think it's good casting, even if his movies have not been great.
Yeah, and if Jason Momoa is right, then maybe we'll see him again. Brad, what do you think about Cavill's performances?
I think that Cavill is pretty good as Superman, but the biggest problem is that he hasn't really been given the opportunity to play the Superman that I think people want to see. And we got a little bit of a taste of that in Justice League, where he was a little bit more playful, a little bit more fun after he went bad for that scene and fought everybody else in the Justice League. But at this point, I almost would rather just see Henry Cavill do other things. You know, he was fantastic in Mission Impossible. You know, he's got that new Netflix series, The Witcher, coming up. And so I feel like just letting him go and do something else is probably best for him and for the DC universe at this point. I think the further that they start to venture out from what they tried to do before with the DC Extended Universe is probably better for DC overall. So maybe letting him go and just moving forward and getting a new Superman is the best approach.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think based on the schedule that Warner Brothers and DC have lined up, the earliest we would realistically see a Man of Steel sequel is 2021 at this point. And I think Man of Steel came out in 2013. So that's 8 years. That's like almost 10 years after, after the first movie. And obviously he's been in several movies and in key roles before, but like primarily like a full-on Superman sequel Yeah, it's going to be a while before we get to that. So I wonder if they're going to keep him around or if Brad says they're going to end up going with somebody else. But let's talk about another sequel. Let's talk about Jurassic World 3. Brad, you wrote this article talking about the future of the Jurassic World franchise and what fans can or, and in this case, cannot expect to see in the next entry in that world. What do we know?
At the end of Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom, we're left with the prospect of the fact that there are now dinosaurs roaming around in the wild. They were let out so that they didn't die from this poisonous gas that had infiltrated the manor in which the climax of the movie takes place. And we were left with the idea that there are now, you know, all sorts of dinosaurs, raptors and Tyrannosaurus rex and Triceratops, all these things just out in the wild where anybody can stumble upon them. And the credit scene after Fallen Kingdom went even a little bit further and showed a couple of pteranodons flying around the Eiffel Tower replica in Las Vegas. And for a lot of people, that seemed to hint at the idea that we were going to get a sort of a Godzilla kind of Jurassic World movie where dinosaurs would be attacking people in cities and neighborhoods, and people were going to have to deal with that. But according to director Colin Trevorrow, who recently spoke with Jurassic Outpost for an extensive exclusive interview, he says that that's not really what they're going for, and the idea of them terrorizing a city doesn't really make much sense to them. And so what he says is, quote, "The world I get excited about is the one where it's possible that a dinosaur might run out in front of your car on a foggy back road or invade your campground looking for food. A world where dinosaur interaction is unlikely but possible, the same way we watch out for bears or sharks. We hunt animals, we traffic them, we herd them, we breed them. We invade their territory and pay for the price, but we don't go to war with them. If that were the case, we'd have lost that war a long time ago." So it sounds like we're not going to get a movie where dinosaurs are necessarily made out to be monsters, but just something maybe like a man versus nature sort of thriller where dinosaurs might show up and create problems for people here and there. And maybe it's up to Chris Pratt and Bryce Dallas Howard, who are confirming for the movie, to maybe try and round them up again and keep them safe. Or maybe we just have to deal with the fact that there's now dinosaurs in the world. So it's that's an interesting idea. And he does talk about the idea of kind of connecting it back to the source material, to the original Jurassic Park. So I imagine he's talking about getting the kinds of scenes that we did in the first movie where the T-Rex escapes his pen in the rain, and there's raptors out in the middle of the jungle that can chase you down. Mm-hmm. So that sounds enticing, but it feels, again, just like treading territory we've already gone before, and in a way that doesn't necessarily feel like it furthers the franchise in an interesting way. So I don't know. I will see whatever they have in store for this will likely be the final Jurassic Park movie for a while, but I'm skeptical.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I'm on record as really not liking Fallen Kingdom at all, but I think the parts that gave me like a flicker of interest were the very end of the movie when, I mean, as you've already indicated, that world is set up where like the dinosaurs are infiltrating the human world in a way that on a scale that we haven't seen before. So I don't know, HT, what did you ever see Fallen Kingdom?
I did. I didn't hate it as much as everyone else on this podcast did. I thought it was very visually stunning, but yeah, I don't really know what it means for the world now that the dinosaurs are out in the real world, so to speak. So I'm not really sure how they will tackle this, if not for dinosaurs attacking cities. But I guess that would be too, like, Godzilla.
Yeah. Brad, you have, like, any idea, any pitches for, like, what you want to see based on Trevorrow's comments here? Like, how you think this movie could actually go?
I mean, I suppose I could see them leaning into, like, maybe the horror aspect of it in the way that Jay Bayona did by, you know, maybe having, you know, some, like he talks about, you know, like a campsite all of a sudden terrorized by dinosaurs or something like that. I don't know. All the ideas that I picture are really just scenes,
right,
you know,
right,
that can get a movie, but that don't really make up a cohesive story. So unless the story is just, we have to get these dinosaurs back so they stop terrorizing people, then I don't really know, because I just don't know how you come up with a satisfying conclusion to a movie like this that ties in with the theme, the idea of, you know, man versus nature and life finding a way and all this stuff, and, you know, having it make sense
Yeah, and like the idea of going around and rounding them all up, that just sounds kind of tedious, and it sounds almost like the there's the life imitating art phrase. It's almost like movies would be imitating video games at that point because it's of like Jurassic World Alive, you know? Like that is basically what you do in the mobile game is just like wander around and like capture dinosaurs. So for the lead characters in the franchise to have to resort to doing that in the final movie, I don't know. That it seems a little underwhelming, but I'm sure they have a lot more in store, so we'll keep you guys posted on that. In the meantime, our last news item is that Legendary wants to make movies and TV shows with their favorite Image Comics creators. So Brian K. Vaughan, Kelly Sue DeConnick, and Matt Fraction have all signed deals with Legendary Entertainment to produce adaptations of some of their beloved comic properties and create original content for Legendary as well. So for Brian K. Vaughan, he just signed an 8-figure deal for 3 years with Legendary Entertainment, where he's going to be, like I said, adapting his previous work and creating new titles. This is the biggest overall film and TV pact for a comic book creator ever. So that's a pretty big deal. And for those who don't know, Brian K. Vaughan is like a rock star in the world of comics. He is responsible for, or at least partially responsible for, Why the Last Man, Saga, Paper Girls, Ex Machina, Runaways. I mean, he is like one of the premier storytellers in that medium. And for him to, he also is one of these guys who's very, very protective of his work. You know, the Why the Last Man is actually supposed to be coming to FX as a TV show, but that property spent years in development at various movie studios and things like that because they couldn't quite crack it. And Brian K. Vaughan, who also is one of the writers of Saga, is or the primary writer of Saga actually, has like been on record multiple times saying we don't want to make this into a movie. But now he has this deal at Legendary, and it sounds like they're giving him the freedom to be able to handle these creator-owned properties the way that he wants to handle them. So we don't know anything specific about the projects that he's working on yet, but that sounds like, we might actually see a Saga TV show or some other amazing adaptation of his work. So I'm very excited about this. He also was a writer on Lost, and he worked on CBS's Under the Dome, so he has a lot of credits outside of the world of comics as well. Kelly Sue DeConnick is probably best known for revamping Captain Marvel, and her comic run provided the basis for Marvel Studios' Captain Marvel, the new Brie Larson movie that's coming out. And Matt Fraction has done a lot of work on Hawkeye, and he has Casanova, and he also is a co-writer of Sex Criminals on, so he has that on his resume. And I thought this would be a good opportunity to transition into yesterday on the podcast. We did a big mailbag episode, and one of the things that we talked about ran for like 15, one of the segments that we talked about ran for like 15 minutes, and it was too long to include in yesterday's episode, but it actually was about comics and graphic novels and recommendations and stuff. And we actually mentioned several of these creators and their works in that segment. So I thought it was a cool lead-in just to point out to everybody that these deals are in the works at Legendary, so we might be seeing some cool projects coming from these people. And now I will transition into the segment that didn't make the cut yesterday, but here are some graphic novel suggestions from us on the podcast. Here we go.
Michael O in Nashville, Tennessee, writes in. He's wondering if you guys could recommend your favorite comic books slash graphic novels. Some of my favorite series include The Walking Dead, Saga, Why the Last Man. I need more to read. Thanks a bunch. I'm addicted to the podcast. I think I've talked a lot recently about reading Ultimate Spider-Man, specifically the Miles Morales, Brian Michael Bendis, arc of that, and I'm still binging my way through that. I'm loving it. I can't highly recommend that enough. In recent years, I've been more addicted to comic books not about superheroes. So like Image does a lot of great comic books. I like they did this comic book a few years back called Alex and Alda, which was about a love story between a man and a robot. An artificial being. It was very interesting. I would like to see that turned into a movie, actually. Letter 44, I think I've talked about in the podcast before, which is we realize that it's hard to pitch Letter 44 without ruining it. But we kind of realized after like a Bush or Trump like president is replaced in office, the next president comes on board and is briefed that the aliens are probably on the way, and that it's something that's going to have to be immediately prepared for. It's not a war thing. It's more very weird sci-fi. If you like Saga, I would recommend it. Descender is another one I like. 100 Bullets was one that I used to read, and I think that could make a great TV series. I think they've tried to adapt it a few times. Killer Be Killed is another one that's hard to explain, but it's kind of about a vigilante who needs to kill people for some reason that I don't want to spoil, or else he will be killed, hence the title. And I also like, you know, like Scott Pilgrim. I like more personal, like, graphic novels. Like, there was this graphic novel called Blankets, which is like this huge Bible-sized book. HT, if you haven't read this, actually, Ben, too, I think both of you would like this. This is about, it's an autobiographical graphic novel about this guy growing up. He was in a very religious family, and it's a coming of age story of him finding his first love, and it's so sweet, and it's just so great. And I believe it's in black and white. It's not colored. Jacob, do you have any suggestions?
Yeah, I have too many suggestions. First of all, I will echo everything Peter recommended. Everything he said is good and worth reading. Michael, since you like Why the Last Man Saga, I'll recommend two more Brian K. Vaughan comics. Let me pull up my list. I'll recommend Paper Girls, which is an 80s set sci-fi story about a group of girls who deliver newspapers who uncover time travel and interdimensional invasions and monsters and creatures, and it goes some very wild places very quickly. It is like Stranger Things, without letting you down in season 2. It is really incredible and really fun. It has that Brian K. Vaughan mix of comedy, you know, and horror and sci-fi. And Cliff Chang's art is amazing. If you also, another Brian K. Vaughan one, this one with art by Tony Harris, Ex Machina. The basic gist here is that in an alternate reality, the second World Trade Center Tower was saved by a superhero who then uses his newfound clout to become elected mayor of New York City. So it flashes back between his career as a superhero and his time trying to run New York is like a mayor who's woefully underqualified for the job. It is very political, very dark, very cynical, and it's actually one of the most thoughtful post 9/11 pieces of art I've ever encountered. My favorite comic of all time is Bone by Jeff Smith. It is very much an old-fashioned adventure story. It starts out very, very funny, gets more serious as it goes along. Think Looney Tunes meets Lord of the Rings made by Pixar, except it's a comic. It is beautiful and lovely. You can buy the whole series in one book for $40. It is the best $40 you'll ever spend. I'll recommend Chew, a comedy mystery series about a man with the power to see the past of anything he bites or ingests. So he's a detective, and he uses his powers to solve mysteries. It is very much issue-based. Each issue is its own complete story, but it all builds to one ongoing science fiction epic where things get really crazy and really funny and ultimately really dark. It is a very, very dark series despite its very goofy setup and tone. I really recommend it. That is written by John Layman with art by Rob Guillory. I recommend The Sixth Gun, which is a supernatural Western series about cowboys facing off against all kinds of monsters and demons and creatures. It is from writer Cullen Bunn and Brian Hurt. It is incredibly fun. I feel like it is one of the most adventurous and exciting series I've ever encountered. It's all finished now, so you can read it all if you wanted to. That's Six Gun. Scalped. This is one they've been trying to talk about making into a TV show for a long time. A noir police detective story set on a Native American reservation in the United States, where an undercover FBI agent infiltrates a crime ring on a Native American reservation where he grew up. And it's really, really good and powerful and has some social commentary. It delves into the problems with reservations and how the people there are neglected and abused by the country. It's very much The Wire set in a reservation instead of in Baltimore. For horror end, Fatale by Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips. This is, imagine, a 1940s film noir story mashed with H.P. Lovecraft horror. It is really scary and really good with really gnarly, gross art. And if you like noir or horror or even both, it is just an immaculate, delicious little thing. And it's also short. I think it's only 20 issues. You can read through it really quickly. An ongoing series, Lazarus. This is Hunger Games meets Game of Thrones. In the future, a handful of families run the entire world. What happens when they go to war? So this is sort of a political intrigue slash war story set. If Game of Thrones was in the future and it was an entire Earth instead of just one continent, that's what Lazarus is. East of West, really wild Western sci-fi alternate history. Go in blind, stick with it. It's worth the time. A trilogy of Rick Remender comics. He's a very, very in-demand writer right now. Fear Agent, really pulpy, heartfelt, hard-hitting sci-fi. Sort of uses the language of old-school 50s science fiction while ingesting it with like really modern human emotion and concepts. His Deadly Class becoming a sci-fi series soon. Essentially Harry Potter with assassins. Very, very good. Black Science, about people traveling through alternate dimensions, trying to save the world and the universe and making it worse. Really, really bleak, really, really thoughtful, imaginative sci-fi. Almost there, guys. Mind Management. Matt Kent's really brilliant and now finished series about a top-secret government agency that essentially controls the world. It is a mystery that unveils itself at its own pace. You will not regret picking up and taking your time with it. By the end of the first arc, you will be hooked. The Wicked and Divine. What if ancient gods resurrect themselves as pop stars? It's really, really good, and it goes places you would not expect from that premise. And finally, since it's becoming a TV show next year, Alan Moore's Run on a Swamp Thing is the best superhero comic of all time. I think it's required reading, and it is. You don't even have to be a DC fan. Its ties to the DC universe are very loose, but it is the most beautiful, thoughtful, outrageous, trippy, crazy thing that DC ever published, and I love it to death.
Yeah, I definitely second Paper Girls. That's a great series. Ben, comics you would recommend?
I mean, there's no way to follow up Jacob on this one. I would just echo a lot of what's already been said. Why the Last Man is great. Saga is great. I'm still, I think, like 8 issues into that, and it's terrific so far. Scott Pilgrim is always really fun to read. I love Watchmen. That's one that I read for the first time probably 15 years ago and really like fell in love with the way that story is structured. Preacher is another one that I loved. I think I read it for the first time 12 years ago, and I haven't read it since, so I don't know if I've if I would react to that story the same way in our culture now as I did then. So I don't know. I guess like a loose recommendation. The story of Preacher is really great, but it's like wildly offensive and meant to be so. So if you can handle that, then maybe give that one a shot if you haven't read that yet. But yeah, I'm sort of like Michael in that I've only read a lot of these, the quote unquote classic modern graphic novels. So I'm probably going to try to take a lot of these recommendations for myself as well.
Ben, you should really read Blankets. I feel like you dig that. HD, comics you'd recommend?
Yeah, I haven't read nearly as many comics as all of you. I spent a lot of my teen years reading manga. So if you want some manga recommendations, I could probably give some as well. But my favorite comic is probably Matt Fraction and David Aja's Hawkeye. And that's a series about Clint Barton on his off time from being an Avenger. And he is kind of a dumpster fire person, but can't stop saving people. And it's just this fun, charming and delightful series that's so funny and so well drawn and very simplistically drawn graphically, but a really engaging series that is one of my favorites. And then another one is The Sandman by Neil Gaiman, one of his early masterpiece, which I had read, I think, like the first 10 trades of it. And it went on for quite a while, but it's about, the Sandman, the manifestation of Dream, aka Morpheus, and his sort of adventures as he escapes from captivity after several decades and comes back and tries to rebuild his kingdom. And you see him meet with his other endless sort of siblings, which are like destiny and death and like the personifications of such concepts. And it's the really interesting thing is that in early issues, it was more tied into like the DC Comics universe. So you see appearances from characters like John Constantine or Elemental Girl. And but then later on, it just gets weirder and Neil Gaiman gets more freedom to do what he wants to do. And it's such a great series. I'm sure you've probably read it because it's so famous. But when I was reading it, it left such an impact on me and gave me a lot of nightmares too. I definitely don't recommend reading it right before you go to bed because some of them can get quite disturbing. But if you guys want some manga recommendations,
yes, we do.
Oh, okay. Well, my favorite manga is probably Rurouni Kenshin, which is one of the sort of classic mangas. It's written by Seijiro Hiko, and it follows a wandering ronin in the 11th year of the Meiji period, and he's a former assassin who has declared that he will only be a pacifist, so he wields a sword that is a blunt-edged sword, and basically becomes friends with this girl who is a daughter of a dojo master, and they go on adventures, and he ultimately, like, more of his past gets revealed. It's so good, and I love the manga a lot more than I like the anime series, because a lot of anime series, they kind of drag the fights on for a long time, but with manga, you can just kind of skim through them. But it's a really well done series that is quite tragic in a lot of parts too. And then I also recommend XXXHolic by Clamp. That's a more sort of like mainstream kind of ghost stories anthology type of series where it follows a character who can see spirits and ghosts and strikes a deal with this woman who is a sorceress or a witch of some sort to become like her maid essentially. And she'll keep his ghosts away while he does other like tasks and sees her other clients and everything. It's a great series. It gets kind of a little bit convoluted towards the end, but I really enjoy the first half of it where it kind of gets into the small ghost stories and the smaller stories. Full Metal Alchemist is great as well. The anime is excellent, both the original and Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood, but the manga is so well written and so expansive and sweeping. So I highly recommend that one for a good gateway one. And if you want a romance, I read a lot of romance manga when I was growing up. So Fruits Basket is a great one. That's a good coming of age high school romance about a girl who stumbles into a family that when they get hugged, they turn into an animal of the zodiac.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. Wow. Manga can get weird, but I recommend all of these highly. And if you ever want to dive into manga, these are good starter packs as well.
I feel like we should have you do a feature post on like recommending, like, you know, it doesn't have to be a series or anything, but like I feel like I would love to read about, you know, the best manga that you've read kind of post.
I mean, I do have like a whole, right, I have a catalog of like best manga, and I remember I have them still like tabbed and bookmarked which really? Manga is my favorite and stuff. So I could potentially write this story at some point.
So maybe coming to slashfilm.com in the future. Your mention of Matt Fraction reminded me that he does a series with Chip Zdarsky. Is that how you pronounce it, Jacob? Zdarsky?
I think so, yeah.
It's called Sex Criminals. And it's like if you like Fight Club and you like David Fincher and you like that kind of like stuff, I feel like this is the comic book for you. It follows a librarian and an actor who meet at a party and after sleeping together realize that when they orgasm, they share the ability to freeze time and they use this ability to become criminals. So it's
really good.
Yeah. And it's really deep too. Like it's not you know, it's really insightful.
It sounds like a dirty joke, but it ends up being a comic about sexual compatibility. It's like, yeah, they can both freeze time when they orgasm, but until they found each other, they would they didn't find anybody else who could share it with them, and now they can. Now they rob banks.
Yeah. And what's also great is in the letters to the editor section, is instead of a normal letters to the editor section that they do in comic books, it's sex advice, which is always fun to read. But because it's, you know, sex advice for comic book geeks instead of, like, you know, the usual whatever, what I assume you'd read in Playboy or whatever.
All right. Hopefully you guys enjoyed that. To wrap up, where can people find more of your work? HT, let's start with you.
You can find me writing every day at slashfilm.com. I'm on Twitter at htranbui.
Brad?
Always slashfilm.com. Also online at Ethan_Anderton on Twitter. And my podcast, Go Flix Yourself, available on iTunes and other podcasting platforms.
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Ben Pears. And you can find more about all the stories we mentioned on today's show at slashfilm.com and linked in the show notes of this episode. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find at the site. You can subscribe to Slash Film Daily on iTunes, Google Play, Overcast, Spotify, all the popular podcast apps. And be sure to send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, or life advice requests from Chris Evangelista to peter@slashfilm.com, and make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Also, don't forget to rate and review the podcast on iTunes. That really does help us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show. Spread the word. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you on Monday.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.